This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, WMUK's Erlene McMichael speaks with Reading Ambassador Walter Dean Myers. But first, Bridge Magazine takes a look at the finances of cities throughout Michigan. This past summer, it was announced that the city of Detroit would file for bankruptcy, the largest municipal bankruptcy in history. Less than a week later, Governor Rick Snyder visited Kalamazoo and, during an interview with WMUK, said Detroit's problems had been decades in the making.
The high point in population was really about 1950. It was 1.85 million people, almost 2 million people in the city of Detroit, and it had declined decade after decade. I think this problem could have been resolved in any one of those decades in terms of making some tough decisions to restructure how the city operates, to really get focused in on services to citizens, and to better manage the financial condition of the city.
I also asked Snyder during that interview in July if Detroit's bankruptcy filing made it more likely that other financially troubled cities would go that route.
Bankruptcy is a last resort, so it shouldn't be viewed as there's a new model to do municipal finance in. It's really, this is everything else has been tried, it doesn't work, but there is a tool reserve there. And again, each situation is unique.
But a series of stories by Bridge Magazine, the online news service of the Center for Michigan, finds that cities across the state are facing many of the same problems. So-called legacy costs to cover retiree pensions and health care are a burden to local units of government. Bridge Magazine contributor Ted Roloffs wrote many of the articles in the series Michigan's Broken Legacy. Ted Roloffs, thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, good to be with you.
What are the problems in Detroit in particular that other cities are facing now or could be facing in the near future?
Well, I think logically speaking, Detroit would be kind of the extreme example of what can go wrong with the city, both in Michigan and in the country. But if you take a closer look at the issues Detroit is facing, you'll find to a lesser degree, but certainly to a significant degree, that there's many other communities in Michigan dealing with the same issues that brought Detroit to this point. It's not solely about unfunded pension and unfunded retiree health care obligations the city has amassed, but that's a big part of the problem. And it helps to put this in a bigger context of what's happened to the state of Michigan over the past several decades. And it's all intertwined. So this issue was related to kind of the creation of the state's economic foundation, the auto industry, what that did for prosperity in the 50s and 60s, how it built unions, it built union benefits. That trickled over into the public sector and established standards that governments across the state used in bargaining with their employees. Then when you fold in what happened to the auto industry, and I think we all know that, it nearly collapsed, making it difficult for that industry to fund its own debt. But in a parallel sense, you have all these cities built around similar benefits. They lost workers, they lost population, they lost property value, but this debt didn't go away. And that's kind of where we are today.
The governor has said that the problems in Detroit were 60 years in the making. That's what he said at the time Detroit filed for bankruptcy. If we're looking at other cities in Michigan, would we go back 60 years or maybe some point closer to the present time?
No, I really think you have to go back that far because it's not as if the auto industry existed solely in Detroit. You'll find pieces of the auto industry throughout the state of Michigan. Obviously, it's not 100% of our economy, but it built so much of what Michigan became in the 50s and 60s and 70s that I don't think you can fully understand the story unless you do indeed go back that far. Now, any particular individual community that you look at down to the village of 2000, you're going to find particular issues that might be peculiar to that community. But I think you have to, this has to be looked at in a broad, long-term way to truly understand how we got to where we are. It didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen in the last 10 years or 20 years. It's something that has built over some decades. And I think anybody who looks more closely at this would understand that it's not something that is going to disappear with the wave of a wand. It's just not going to happen that way.
One of your stories compares Portage, which is, as you say, one of the few cities in Michigan with no unfunded pension or retiree health care costs, with Kalamazoo, which had a $263 million shortfall as of 2011. What did Portage do right?
They began taking steps to reduce these obligations way back in the mid-1980s and continued to address that over time, like going from the defined benefit model for pensions to defined contribution, which would basically be 401k versus a defined benefit. And the same thing with retiree health care. They did that at a time when the private sector was beginning to make that shift. And what's kind of interesting about this story is that there wasn't really a light put on the state of municipal finance for retiree health care until 2007, when the government body that establishes standards for public accounting methods said that municipalities had to record and account for their retiree health care debt. And that's when these numbers really became more apparent in cities across America, and I think kind of underlined how serious this issue is. But in the case of Portage, they began taking steps decades ago to the point now where they have no unfunded retiree health care or pension debt. Now, Kalamazoo, to be fair, they've begun, I think going back, if memory serves, as far back as 2005, began addressing this issue with their various bargaining units. And as a result, in the most recent accounting for the retiree health care, I think that was put at $190 million versus the $260 million that was accounted for in this Michigan State University study that was as of 2011. So a year later, they had reduced that liability considerably. So,
but Portage got to the game earlier than Kalamazoo and probably earlier than most other cities, right?
Yeah, Kalamazoo, I think, is more typical rather than unusual in how it's dealt with this. And you might say that Portage is more unusual rather than typical. That's kind of the way it looks to me after all the communities that I looked at.
Can Portage be an example for other cities, or is it a case of Portage got to the game so early that for other cities now they've fallen behind and the Portage example really doesn't fit because other cities are now trying to dig their way out of the hole that Portage never really got into?
The options for cities, I guess you could say in a sense, are limited unless one thinks that you can take a obligation, a pension or retiree health care obligation that a worker has received during their employment and as part of their contract and is now receiving in retirement, and the city can say arbitrarily, well, we're kind of running out of money, so we're just not going to pay this benefit anymore. I don't think that's a realistic option, especially because pensions are protected in the state constitution. In theory, the benefit can be could be bargained away through collective bargaining with an existing bargaining unit. That also seems unlikely. Politically unpopular, controversial, and it's unlikely that unions would easily give away these benefits. What you can do is begin making changes as contracts come up. Municipalities are doing that out of necessity, but it's going to take time for this to really deal with the long-term debt implications here.
You also write about small towns facing some of these very same problems. Sturgis has an unfunded healthcare debt of $17 million. Bangor has a $1.8 million debt. That's not nearly the same aggregate amount. However, it's 30% of the general fund for Bangor. Do smaller towns face the same problems? And I'm wondering, do they have a different set of options in front of them that, say, Kalamazoo would have or maybe even Detroit?
I think the principal difference between the large and the small town that has this issue is simply the size of the debt. It may sound trivial to look at a debt of, whatever, let's say $1.8 million in a certain small community, that sounds like absolutely nothing. To that community, in proportion to the size of the revenue it collects in taxes, the number of people it has, it's significant. I remember looking at, in particular, Kalkaska, where I spoke to a woman, retired employee, who had been a member of that city employment. I believe it was something close to 30 years. Had retiree health care as part of a benefit that she acquired, as did other employees, by giving up pay raises over a number of years, money that was to go into a fund to pay for the retiree health care. And I don't know what happened to the actuarial calculations there, but that fund has now run dry. And the village is still paying those obligations, but it has put it in a difficult position. So naturally, when you're in a position at that stage in your life, you're nearly 80 years old, and you've got some health concerns, and there's some talk in the village that they may have to find a way to address these obligations, you're worried about if that's going to be covered, something that you had counted on for many, many years. So that's the dilemma, whether it's a large or a small community.
So the dilemma the cities face is, do we throw people who have been promised these benefits under the bus, so to speak, or do we raise taxes amongst people who are currently working to help pay for people who are now retired? Is that pretty much where cities are at this point?
Well, those are, you know, two basic options that you can look at. You got to get more money somehow, so you can raise taxes or you can cut services. And we looked at communities that have done that, where they've cut and cut and cut to the point where people living in a community have to ask themselves, is it worth living here? When I am still paying taxes, but the city has cut its budget so far to the point where one can say from a certain perspective, this city isn't really livable anymore. So that option can only take you so far. When taxpayers feel like they've given all they can give, taxation isn't a real attractive option either. The third is going back and being as smart as you can with benefits going forward, and cities are now certainly taking that path. And I suppose another option, which is yet to be fully explored, is for communities to bond for this debt. There is a law that was passed last year that allows municipalities to bond for pension or retiree health care debt. Thus far, I believe only two communities have taken advantage of that. And there's some thought that that approach could be broadened by lowering the bond rating standards necessary for communities to do that. That legislation has yet to really be fully explored. So it's kind of in a holding pattern.
And then there, of course, is the option that Detroit ended up taking, or at least that the governor decided Detroit would take, which is bankruptcy. Is there any city right now that you would look at and say that is even, you know, getting close to getting on the table at this point?
Well, you've got various cities that seem to be in and out of emergency management. I think there's about a half dozen or more. I don't know how likely a second bankruptcy in Michigan is. There's certainly a number of communities. I think by most standards, people in some other parts of the country would be shocked if they even just took a drive through communities like Flint. That's an obvious example. It's always kind of struck me as sort of a mini version of Detroit. If you look at the scale of the abandoned neighborhoods, the abandoned auto plants, same issue there. Detroit lost nearly 2/3 of its population. Flint lost half of its population over a period of several decades. There are similar issues there, and they're under emergency management. I don't know that I would want to get a crystal ball out and say this community will, this community will not go into bankruptcy, but there's certainly still a pretty high level of financial stress in any number of communities in Michigan, and it's going to take many years for this to be sorted out.
This was a long-term problem, as we've said, many decades in the making. Some people saw it coming earlier than others. I'm just wondering, how much did the events of 2007 and 2008, the recession and the crash of the housing market, exacerbate this problem and perhaps get it in front of us earlier than it would have been otherwise?
Yeah, I think that only reinforced what was coming, and it obviously didn't help it hit Michigan maybe as hard as anywhere in the country, what happened with the crash of the housing market and the Great Recession of, I guess we're calling that 2007, 2008. It took away so much revenue as property values collapsed to cities, and that's kind of their lifeblood. At the same time, people were leaving the state. So, again, cities had this debt obligation that had been built up over decades. That doesn't magically go away when, at the same time, the revenues the cities depend on to provide their services and to meet these obligations took a considerable dive with that recession. So it's like putting an underline and an exclamation mark behind that legacy debt problem.
Ted, thank you very much for your time.
Sure.
Ted Roelofs is a contributor for Bridge Magazine, the online news service of the Center for Michigan. You can find links to their stories about the pension and health care obligations of Michigan cities at WMUK.org.